God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Heavenly Father, thank you for your grace and mercy on me. Help us to glorify you by carrying your message tonight. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, I'm going to do a little bit of the end of working with others. We have some new and old people here, and there's some really powerful information in these pages. On page 98, it says, they're talking about working with another alcoholic, and it says, it's not how much you actually give and when the how to give, but it's the difference. It's knowing when and how to give that makes the difference between failure and success. Everybody see that, page 98? And the problem with that is that we have to figure out how to help people, when to help and how to help. It says, the minute I put my work on a service plane, the alcohol commences to rely upon me rather than upon God. That's the theme, reliance upon God today. That's the key. We want to live on a different basis, trusting and relying upon God. Where does it say that in the big book? Page 68, when it talks about fear. I can't live in self-reliance anymore. Then I'll be full of fear and I'll be self-centered. I have to trust and rely upon God. He will clamor for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol. Now, who masters alcohol? God. See, that's the problem. People come in, they're gonna get this and they're gonna fix this. We can't do anything. We have to let God run our lives and he will fix it. He says he can't fix it until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. That's another one of those one-line sentence. It's nonsense. We have to get our spiritual needs taken care of before we have to worry about anything else. Because if we don't have our spiritual connection with God, we won't have any material needs, right? Not some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. This is the truth. I believe this. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking. And this is a statement that doesn't really leave any loopholes. Simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Because if you put your dependence upon people, what's wrong with that? They become your higher power. And then you have expectations for them and they don't meet it. And then you get upset. Anybody ever done that? And then you're disturbed. And then your mind says you need a drink. That's why relationships are so dangerous to alcoholics who are new in sobriety, even if you've been in a relationship, to continue in it is really hard because you don't know how to live. That's why we're going to be doing to wives and family afterwards, envision for you. And then we're going to go back to step three. Now, they're talking about divorce and the domestic problem here. I'm going to skip that. Nobody here ever had domestic problems. It does say on page 99, the most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness, not arguing, not getting your point across, running their lives. After they have had tangible results, the family perhaps wants to go along. So you have to be the one, if you're in a relationship and you're new in recovery, you have to work these steps so you can have these spiritual tools so you can live differently. No steps, no spiritual tools, it's going to be the same old thing. Nothing's going to change, and then you'll probably drink again. Some people can stay sober without the steps and spiritual tools, but they're not fun to live with or be around. I would suggest trying to have emotional sobriety with physical sobriety. I'm being silly, but if you don't have emotional sobriety, there's no point in it, in this. You know, nothing's going to change. The alcoholic must demonstrate that he can be sober, considerate, and helpful, regardless of what anybody says or does. And that's the theme of these pages. We fall below the standard. I'll probably do it today. But we must try to repair the damage immediately, lest we pay the penalty for a spree. You see, the spree's always hanging in the, lurking behind us. Because anger, unresolved conflict is fatal for an alcoholic. Anybody agree with that? It says if there's going to be divorce or separation, there's no undue haste for the couple to get together. The man must be sure of his recovery. That's where this thing, you can't have a relationship for 1 year. Has he ever heard that at a meeting? Some brilliant man or woman will say, now you can't have a relationship for a year because they heard it, you know, before. But so on day 366, you can have a relationship. I've always wondered about it. 360, no, you can't have a relationship yet. You got to wait that year. And the problem is that you need to have a relationship immediately when you're in AA with God. And you have to have your God relationship before any other relationship will work. So instead of saying you can't have a relationship for a year, I tell people you need to get in this book and work these steps right away. Don't have to work them perfectly, but you have to get into four and start your inventory and start looking at yourself and starting to see how you need to change with God's help, or else nothing's going to change. It says, you must be sure of your recovery. The wife should fully understand this new way of life. And that's true, and a lot of wives don't want to do it. And a lot of wives don't want to do it because it works for you to be the problem. As long as you're the problem, they don't have to change. And so that's tough. So if the relationship is to be resumed, it must be on a better basis since the former did not work. Now, a lot of people go to counseling. I think working the 12 steps together in counseling would probably be the way, or working the 12 steps, each of you, with someone, and then trying to live them. This means a new attitude and spirit all around, not you better change and things will get better, because that's not going to work. Have you ever heard that? You have to have a new attitude and spirit all around. So what's the attitude you want to have? That you want to be kind, loving, patient, tolerant, consideration. You want to be of service to the person that you're in a relationship with. You want to be helpful to them. They're just human beings. They're going to be, you're going to need to have, ask God to save you from being angry at them, because they're going to may do things that bother you, and you're going to have to say they're just human beings like me. They have their spiritual defects just like me. Let the alcoholic continue its program day by day. When the time for living together has come, it will be apparent to both parties. You might want to leave it to God and pray about it. See when it's the right time. Here's a statement that doesn't mince any words. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless, quote, he has his family back. It just isn't so. Or the job back, or whatever. In some cases, the wife will never come back. Remind the prospect, notice the term, the prospect, that his recovery is not dependent upon people. They emphasize that again. It is dependent upon my relationship with God. They don't mince any words here, but this is true. This is the most true statement I can see. And it's what Scripture tells you. You're never going to have any peace unless you have God's peace. We have seen men get well whose families have not returned. We have seen others slip when the family came back too soon. And then here's the paragraph that I refer to quite a bit. I don't know if it's my favorite paragraph in the book, but it's certainly worth noting and reading whenever you're bothered. It says, both me and the new man must walk day by day. We're going to walk day by day, and it doesn't say that you're in front are there behind you. You just walk together day by day in the path of spiritual progress. Now, how do you do that? You work the steps. You live in step 10 and 11. You inventory all throughout the day, and you inventory at night. You prayer and meditation, so you improve your conscious contact, so you can walk better during the day, and then at night you look back and see how well you walked. And then you ask God's forgiveness and what corrective measures. If you persist in this, now it doesn't say you do it for a month and then you take a month off. No, if you persist in this, remarkable things will happen, I guarantee you. And then here's the line I really like. When I look back, I realize that the things which came to me when I put myself in God's hands were better than anything I could have planned. Now, since I, as long as I've been sober, if I look back today, the things that happened, I had some really tough things to go through. And how my life turned out today and where I am today, I could never have planned it. I would have sold myself short. And I look back and things worked out differently than I thought they needed to. And they worked out the right way. So if you're in self-pity, any alcoholics ever get in self-pity? When you're singing the self-pity song, if you've been sober a while, read this line and look back to where you were the moment of complete defeat. And look at your life today. And if you're not grateful to God for his grace and mercy on you, I don't know what else can do it, really. Follow the dictates of a higher power. And also, with this line, when you've been doing this a while, you see people come in and their lives are a complete mess. And then you see them years later celebrating and what has happened to them and how things have changed. It to me, that's the greatest evidence of the way God can, power of God. The God exists, he's real, and he works in our lives. That's why it is important to share, what's happened when you have 8 years of sobriety, to kind of tell people what it was like when you came in and just what it's like today and how that happened. You did this. Follow the dictates of a higher power. Also, when you do that, don't spend all the time on how bad it was, you know, and all the circumstances when you came in. Some people do that. No, we know it's bad, but tell us how it's changed, how things have changed, how you've changed, how your reactions have changed. And here's a key line. There's so much power in this line. We could do a whole meeting on it. Follow the dictates of a higher power, not me, but the dictates of God. And guess what I get? I will presently live in a new and wonderful world. Who wouldn't want that? Anybody not want that? And here's the key thing, comma, no matter what your present circumstances. Now this is page 100 in the big book. When you come in, my whole life was lived to make the circumstances good, and then I would be in a new, wonderful world. Anybody do that? Today I know I could be in a new and wonderful world if I'm with God and following his will and playing the role he signs, no matter what's going on out there. That doesn't have to disturb me. It doesn't have to change my wonderful world. Because what could be more wonderful than being at peace with God? I take it for granted too much. I'm just sitting, I'm relaxed, I'm at peace. I don't have any craziness in my head. And that's most of the way I live. I still get it, but not much. Not like I used to. And it's a wonderful world. It says, when working with a man and his family, don't participate in their quarrels. That's good advice. Don't become a marriage counselor. But urge them, if you see the family as a sick person, should be treated accordingly. And the family's kind of sick too after living with you for a while. And we're going to see that when we do to wives, both sides of it. And it says you should warn against arousing resentment or jealousy. We should point out his defects of character not going to disappear overnight. Anybody agree with that? And that we've entered a new period of growth. the people should be blessed that you're sober in the beginning. Now, I hear people come to AA and they go, well, I've been sober 30 days and I don't know why, you know, they're not forgiving me and I don't understand this. Well, hello, you're a tornado and you come out of the cellar and you can't see the damage you've done. It says, now they're talking about assuming your spiritual fit, you could do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. Now the key to that, the key to my whole life is to be spiritually fit. That means centered with God, and then I will react differently than I used to. Now, what that means is if I'm going through the day and I'm starting to get a little impatient, I have to say, I need to get back to you, God, and help me, give me patience. I can't react when I'm disturbed anymore because it's no good. And so when I start to get disturbed, I have to go right back to God and say, change the way I'm seeing this. And if you do that, then you, when you think of getting a drink, God will say, bad idea. And so when you talk about going to bars and weddings where alcohol is served, you get to the point, if you're spiritually fit, the problem has been removed. You won't even notice it. It's not part of your life anymore. And that's the promises on page 85, the recovered promises. It says, God has removed the problem because you're in the world of the spirit. You're not fighting it. You have a new attitude towards alcohol. And you're placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. You're not going to be in a position of neutrality unless you have a relationship with God. And God can give you that new perspective on alcohol, bad idea. And so you have to get to page 85 to get that. Now that means you have to work steps 1 through 9 and you're living in the world of the spirit. If you haven't worked steps 1 through 9, you're not in a position of neutrality. It doesn't take long to work steps 1 through 9 because you don't have to do steps 8 and 9 perfectly. You just have to start working them and making your amends. And then it says you've entered the world of the Spirit. I believe the world of the Holy Spirit. And remember, the people who wrote this book were Christians who were in the Oxford group. And the Oxford group was Christians who were trying to practice and grow in the image and likeness of their Creator and their Lord. And they were believers, and they had what we call justification, but they weren't sanctified yet. None of us are. But they wanted to live better. So they had the 6 steps, and they were trying to use prayer, meditation, and work these steps so that they would be closer to their Creator, and their lives would be better, and they would be of more service. It says, an alcoholic who can't meet conditions where there's alcohol, back on 101, has an alcoholic mind. That's not good. An alcoholic mind means a mind that has no power not to drink. And we don't want a mind that has no power not to drink. So how do you get that? You better start a relationship with God. And steps 1, 2, and 3 won't do it. You got to start the action and move out of the self-centered world into God's world through the actions of 4 through 9. And then the program of recovery is to live every day with God the best you can in 10 and 11. And then working with others helps ensure that you're doing the deal. It says, if you can't meet it, there's something wrong with your spiritual status. And they say you can go to the Greenland ice cap, and if you're an alcoholic, you're going to find booze. If you're an addict, you're going to find drugs. You know, and nothing can stop an alcoholic from finding alcohol unless maybe you're in jail and locked up if they want to drink. Any scheme of combating alcoholism which proposes to shield the sick man from temptation is doomed to failure. Now, so what is our shield? God. God is my shield. That's from Ephesians chapter 6. We put on the armor of God. If you're an alcoholic, you better put on the armor of God because you're going to be battling your alcoholism for the rest of your life. And if you don't have much armor, the weapons of the devil or your ego are going to get through. It says, if you go to the place and you don't, you're not, be sure you have a legitimate reason for being there. Now remember, Jim went to the bar in the country to sell a car after he missed work on Monday, and he had words with his boss, and he went to the country to sell a car. Was that a good reason? Think about it. And then when he's in the bar, because he'd been there before, he just had a sandwich. He was just hungry, and he was going to sell a car. He went to the country to sell a car, to the bar. See how preposterous it is? And then as he's in there, the thought, it's in italics, suddenly crossed his mind that if he put whiskey and milk, it would be okay. And he took one, and he said, but he vaguely sensed that this wasn't too good an idea. He vaguely sensed, but he did it anyway. And then he was off, and they said there was another trip to the asylum for Jim. And that's him more about alcoholism. You see how preposterous we are? Because he was irritable, restless, and discontent, he failed to enlarge his spiritual life, and he had no power not to drink. They say if you have to go anywhere, make sure you have a good reason, and be sure you're on page 100, be sure you're on solid spiritual ground before you go anywhere, and that your motive in going is thoroughly good. So if you're having problems at work, pray before you go to work. Get God-centered. Say, God, be with me today. Keep me, make me be loving, patient, kind, tolerant, considerate, compassionate. Make a decision before you get out of the car to forgive the first 10 idiots that drive you crazy. When you're new, maybe make it 5. The longer you're sober, you could be wrong. And it says, page 102, they sum up really the instructions on the big book and the steps. Your job, we're on page 102 of the big book. You got a big book? All right, well, you can look at it. Page 102. Your job is now to be at the place. This is my job. So people think you have a job. You may work at a place, but my job now is to be at the place where I be of maximal helpfulness to others. And to do that, I have to have a right relationship with God. Now, page 77 ties this together. On page 77, they're talking about how we have to make amends to people we harmed and this and that. And it says, at the moment, I'm trying to put my life in order. Anybody's life out of order when you come in here? Anybody? But I didn't know why it was out of order. I didn't realize it was me. I made my life out of order. It was them. Did anybody have them So at the top it says, I'm putting my life in order. So how do you put your life in order when you come here? Well, steps 1 through 2 and 3 put your life in order with God. God's going to be God, and I'm not going to play God anymore. They told me why. I didn't understand it, because it didn't work. It took me a while to read those 2 lines. You see, I'm not that smart. It didn't work. And it's never going to work. Now, how do you get right with your mind in steps 4 through 7? You begin to see the truth of your thinking. How do you get right with the world in steps 8 and 9? And then you do 1 through 9 every day in step 10. And it says, my real purpose, it's not an end in itself, my real purpose in AA is to fit myself to be of maximum service. You might want to circle this line. Every day, these 2 lines, my real purpose every day is to fit myself to be of maximal service to God and the people about Him. Now, how do I fit myself? Prayer, meditation, inventory, talking to someone, doing it every day, continue to do the deal. So then he says on page 102, your job now is to be at the place where I may be of maximum helpfulness to others. And it says, keep on the firing line of life. Life is a firing line. Isn't a firing line like an execution thing, or is that where they're battle or something? It's not a good place. You're in danger. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives. and God will keep you unharmed. Now remember, when you wake up in the morning, if you're an alcoholic, it says when you wake up, you make plans for the day. They say stop right away. Before you do anything, because they're your plans, they're not going to be good. They say ask God to direct your thinking, divorcing it from selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives. So when you wake up, you're supposed to get centered with God, have Him direct your thinking, and divorce it from your selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives. And then you can think about your plans today with your motives being in line with God. Now, when do you get your will back? When can you use your will in AA? When your will is aligned with God's will. Not that complicated. Don't use your will if it's not aligned with God's will. You're going to screw up. And so the whole thing is getting on that beam, staying on the beam. Don't fall off too far. You fall off, get back on. The theme, the book is very simple. It seems complicated, but it says simple things over and over again. And he says, we don't want to show intolerance or hatred of drinking. Well, we don't really have an opinion on alcohol. Remember, they asked AA, they had a congressional hearing in 1950s, and they wanted to put a warning label on alcohol. And they said, well, we'll ask somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous to come and talk and give their opinion. So some poor guy, they sent him down from New York, probably picked him at a business meeting. And the poor guy goes before the House of Representatives, and they say, we want to put a warning label on alcohol. What should we put on it? He says, well, we don't have any opinions, but you might put a label that says this bottle will run out. And that's the deal. I thought that was good. Because alcohol's not our problem. Somebody asked me to explain to some guy how the disease of alcoholism occurs when you're sober. This was after a noon meeting. So I started talking. He says, well, no, I'm an alcoholic. I drink too much. Alcohol's a problem. I said, well, not if you don't take the first drink. And then he starts arguing with me. I said, well, have a good day. But you see, alcohol's not my problem. Alcohol was a solution to my spiritual illness. If I'm not living, see, I have an allergy to alcohol, so I'm in deep shit if I drink. Anybody else have that? And so if I don't live with God, I'm going to drink again. And I often say it, and people look, I have no power not to drink today. What's that all about? I don't. The only power I have is to seek the power that gives me the choice. Somebody asked, what makes you an alcoholic at a meeting? And people just rambled on and on and on. What makes you an alcoholic is you've lost the control on how much you drink, and you've lost the power to choose whether you're going to drink or not. It's that simple. And so the solution is to find live with a power that can give you the power of choice. And it says, we can't have an attitude of bitterness or hostility to alcohol, right? In fact, people are surprised that most of the meetings here, we don't talk about alcohol at all, do we? We talk about our solution. You want to talk about the solution, and that's what the book is all about. But remember, they don't mention alcohol after page 43. The first two steps, they talk about our powerlessness over alcohol and how we get restored to sanity with God, and we agnostics. And then they say, we have a dilemma. We have no power to live. And that we need a power that solves our problem, and that power is God. And it says, now we're going to talk about God. And so this is really a God book. This is a book about a relationship with God. It says, after all, and this is in squiggly writing, after all, our problems were of our own making. Holy wow. It's true. I didn't know that when I came in here. I knew I was a mess, and I thought I probably had something to do with it, you know, a little bit. But really, problems were all of my own making. And if I don't have a good day today, who ruins it? Me. I shouldn't ever have any bad days. They should all be good. And good is a judgment, so they should be peaceful. I want to be undisturbed. That's my goal. I don't want to be disturbed today by anything. I want a shield between me and disturbing people so that they don't bother me. And then I want to live differently so I'm not the disturbing person. We don't talk about that enough. We can be disturbing people. And so we don't want to do that either. Bottles were a symbol. It's just a symbol. But, and it says we have to stop fighting anybody or anything. They use that line on page 84 when they're talking about when you're recovered and you're a world of the spirit, you've stopped fighting everybody or everything. And so you're a different person. You're reacting differently, but you're not going to react that way if you're not in fit spiritual condition, if you're not in a relationship with God. And you have to do that every day. You have to maintain it every day. You have to seek and you have to work at it. And the instructions on how you do that are on page 84 to 88, and they've changed my life. And it says we have to. Notice we have to, exclamation. Why do we have to? Because if we're still fighting everybody and anything, then we have no power in our lives to keep us from drinking. You see that? The relationship between God, living with God, and drinking. Now, once you've been doing this a while, you don't think about drinking enough, but you can get pretty disturbed and you can have a pretty unpleasant life and you can keep fighting everybody and everything. And until you get back on the beam, it's not going to get better. And I don't want to get very far away from God. Remember, I'm a magnet and God's the magnet and I'm a paperclip. And when I come in here, I'm pretty far from that magnet. There's no power. And if you just start this work step four with someone and take one, two, and three completely, you start getting some power. The more you work the steps, the closer you get to that magnet. And if you're close to the magnet won't let you pull away. You have to pull away. And so that's the deal. So I thought this was a good way to get back into the book and look at really what it's all about. Dependence upon God, reliance on God, serving others. So, thank you guys.